Hello and welcome to this week's Big Boat Interview. This week I am talking to Guy Booth, the captain of the 58-metre Royal Housman Superyacht Fee, which has been detained in London since 2022 and which now finds itself in an increasingly precarious situation at risk of falling out of class altogether and subject to repeated intrusions by members of the public. Guy discusses how we've arrived at this point and why Fee has fallen between the bureaucratic cracks and now presents a clear and present danger to its crew and people living nearby. No one is more determined to bring this sad situation to a conclusion than Guy, but the hurdles remain huge. Without further ado, here is my interview with Guy Booth, the captain of 58-metre Fee. Guy, welcome to the Boat Briefing podcast. We're doing this not only because obviously Fee remains in detention in London, but because you sent a quite extraordinary email the other day to myself and a few others just detailing the pretty shocking condition that Fee finds herself in currently. And for those of you in the superyacht industry that have been following this story, it's become a pretty sorry tale, really. And so we thought we'd dig into how we got to where we are, and there's no one better to run us through that story than her captain, Guy. And Guy, you've been with this project for 7 or 8 years now, since the very conception of this yacht. So, I mean, perhaps we can just start with, you're speaking to us from the bridge of the boat now. I mean, from your point of view, I mean, what is your state of mind at the moment? Let's start with that.
Yeah, good morning, Stuart. Thanks for having me on. It is, a lot of people ask me my state of mind over this. My resolve isn't dented whatsoever. I committed mentally years ago to see this project through. It's now turned into a case of personal honour for me. I know that this is unjust. And this is a view shared by my crew, who most of whom are still with me. It's a case of personal honour. We know who this owner is. We know who this owner is not. We know why the detention order was given. We know the circumstances around Mr. Shapps at that time, why he was keen to put up smoke and mirrors. And we understand very well the situation that now nobody really knows what to do with Fee without losing face. It's quite widely known and believed in the media and the general public that this is a case of government overreach, a slightly embarrassing inheritance for the Labor government. They didn't cause this situation, and yet they're the ones having to deal with it. The civil servants involved don't really know how to deal with it. They've never crossed this bridge before. And so as much as my resolve is strong, my personal determination is strong, I do find that, I battle, I don't battle depression, but it is certainly, it's gutting, you know. Yeah. So many people have put so much energy into this project, and to have it sidelined like this is mentally quite damaging and draining. It's exhausting.
And it really seems like you've fallen between the kind of bureaucratic cracks at various government departments, and it passed from desk to desk with no one prepared to deal with it, really. That's certainly the impression from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, that's most definitely the case. The civil servants that we are dealing with, people at the Department for Transport and the Government Legal Division, they're all very professional. They're all very polite. They all seem very willing to help. And in some senses, they've almost been apologetic. But they've also been quick to explain that their hands are tied by a nameless faceless person further up the tree. The other problem that we've found is that such an enormous turnover of personnel on the government side, each time we respond to something, we're responding to a different person. So we have to start the entire explanation all over again. We're having to explain very, very basic maritime terms, shipping terms. I mean, we're dealing with the Ministry of Transport here, and the world's largest method of transport is shipping. It staggers me that we've not been put in touch with somebody that understands boats or shipping. Nobody knows what a class survey is. Nobody knows what galvanic corrosion is. Nobody understands automatic fire doors, intrinsically safe zones. I'm having to explain these like I do to my children. And then we wait for 3 or 4 months before we get a reply. And when we do get a reply, it's from someone new.
I mean, it must be exhausting and, incredibly draining in every aspect, really. I can't imagine the frustration you must be experiencing. But why don't we just provide a bit of a history lesson for everyone listening. So obviously, Russia invades Ukraine in February 2022. A few months later, there's a rash of yacht seizures in various jurisdictions around the world. Fee happened to be in London at the time. And then in a moment of political opportunism, let's call it, the then Transport Secretary for the Conservative government, Grant Shapps, filmed himself on TikTok on the dock next to Fee with various... police officers in high-vis vests kind of officially detaining the super yacht. And I've got the exact words here. So at the time, Grant Shapps said, "Today we've detained a £38 million super yacht and turned an icon of Russia's power and wealth into a clear and stark warning to Putin and his cronies. Detaining the Fee proves yet again that we can and will take the strongest possible action against those seeking to benefit from Russian connections." That was a statement that you vehemently objected to, calling it defamatory in the past. And then in various appeals lodged by you and the owner's team last year, it was acknowledged by the UK government that the unchallenged evidence that the owner holds no political or administrative position in Russia, has never engaged in any form of political activity, and has never had any connections of any kind with President Putin, which seems to make it very, very clear that the owner of Fee, Mr. Naumenko, has no ties with the Putin government, the regime, has not benefited from the Putin government or the Putin regime, and yet, unlike many of his contemporaries, is not allowed to use his yacht, which remains in this kind of stasis in London.
Well, it is. It's quite remarkable, isn't it? I mean, what we do know is that on the same day that Mr. Shapps presented the detention notice and was posing like a big game hunter on the quay beside Fee, 20 minutes later and 5 miles to the west outside Downing Street, the Met police walked into Downing Street with a briefcase full of fixed penalty notices for Mr. Johnson for partying during COVID lockdown. Now, ultimately, that's what brought down, one of the factors that brought down Mr. Johnson's government. Now, they knew that that was coming. They knew that that was coming. And so, toss a grenade over there and scream fire and point, and everybody looks the other way, don't they? So that's exactly what happened on that day. So, quite remarkable behaviour from a government minister.
I don't expect at that point they could have ever foreseen Fee remaining stuck in London more than two years later. Or maybe they did, I'm not sure.
On the face of it, Stuart, we feel that the British government at that time, although it was motivated by smoke and mirrors and spurious activity from Mr. Shapps, we feel that they probably did the right thing. Yeah, there had been an invasion of one country into another country. There had been a declaration of war that put global stability in question at that time. Nobody knew what was happening or why or how long or the extent of the actions. And so in line with international responses to that, the British government decided to close her ports, all UK ports, to Russian ships, and national authorities in the UK began to investigate ships that were already in the UK with possible links to Russia. Okay, so in March, that happened in February. Okay, now in March, the UK National Crime Agency shared information with the DfT, the Department for Transport, that Fee was in fact owned by a Russian national. And it's on those basis, on those grounds, that they served a temporary movement restriction order, okay, which is what we've got now, what we've had all along. Okay, so in that sense, they did the right thing. Stop, stop, stop. Who are you? Who owns that boat? Where do you get the money from? Is he an oligarch? Is he a former KGB agent that overnight became CEO of an oil company? Is he one of Mr. Putin's right-hand men? I mean, you know, sort of morally, that's, as a Western democracy, that's probably the correct course of action at that time. Now, later, just looking at chronologically, in April 22, early April, so this is when we first questioned this decision, the detention decision. It's only 2 weeks later. We questioned it with the under the courts, through the courts rather, and the decision was to maintain. This is a quote from the ruling, to maintain the detention for now, whilst we obtain further evidence. We do not need to consider this fully in the round once that is obtained and we come to a properly evidenced decision. So they said, you know, temporary detained while we obtain further evidence. They've had 2.5 years. They have, as you mentioned previously, they've acknowledged that he is not politically connected. He's never been politically connected. He's never been military. He's never benefited from the Russian regime. He doesn't receive his contracts due to his allegiance to the Russian regime. He's a fairly low-level businessman.
We should point out as well that he's never appeared on any sanctions list or anywhere near sanctions.
No, he's never appeared on any sanctions list, not in the UK, the EU, nor the USA. And
he's been checked out by the EU authorities and he's free to use his other yachts.
Yeah,
he's free and clear to operate them for charter and use them personally in European waters.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, you would think, it would be safe to assume that after this case of Fee, all global intelligence agencies have had a really, really, really close look at this guy, going right back to his school reports. Yeah. And the EU ruling on the use of his other yacht, so there are no legal grounds under which to detain or impinge upon the use of his assets. Sorry for inconveniencing you. Have a nice day. So with other vessels have been cruising the Med, chartering commercially. There are other big, major yachting companies who you and I both know and work with for many years have done in-depth KYC on this owner to see if they are allowed to represent him for the chartering of his vessel, for insurance on his other vessels, for the sale of one of his other yachts. And for example, you know, they do in-depth KYC and they've all come back with, yep, there's no reason why we can't work with this chap. The UK have said the same thing. And yet they continue to detain Fee.
Let's talk about Fee in her current state. Obviously, there was still some warranty work outstanding when she came to London. She needed to go back to the shipyard for a period. She was obviously built at Royal Housman. She's kind of showing some signs of serious degradation now, and to the point where she needs to get lifted out of the water anyway later this year, or else she risks falling out of class. She can't be lifted out of the water anywhere except Housman, because she has special kind of chocks or supports at the shipyard that she needs to sit on when she's taken out of the water. Still, there's no decision from the UK government. So this could be, a genuinely dangerous situation where the boat degrades to the point where she causes risk to life, or she causes she becomes a pollution risk, and she's out of class. So that seriously restricts how you can operate the boat anyway.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And this is something that we have been pointing out, making very clear with hundreds of pages of documentation, pointing out this pothole in the road ahead. It wasn't just warranty work. She was never truly finished.
Hmm.
There were finishing items, snagging lists. Yeah, quite normal with a new boat. And we then had the full support of Royal Housemen. We're determined to come and finish the vessel to the Royal Housemen usual standards, you know, possibly the best custom yacht builder in the world. And so she wasn't finished, and she had warranty issues. All of that work stopped. Hmm. All of that work stopped for quite some time. There was, it was an unknown whether companies were permitted to engage and work with Fee. So there was a huge period of time where small snagging issues became bigger and bigger and bigger. Knock-on effect, domino effect. A small relay that was underrated for the current, the electrical current that's being presented to it. Well, the relay breaks down and damages the printed circuit board in that component. Well, that printed circuit board then starts giving out erroneous signals, which then increases current to other electronic components. We've had numerous incidences of smoke and smell of melting electronics in the engine control room, in the engineering control room. We've managed to avoid a fire on board, but in the meantime, we have numerous systems shut down, disabled.
Mm.
These are fire detection, fire and smoke detection system, automatic fire doors that are meant to open, unlock and open on detection of a fire. Well, our fire doors closed and locked, meaning crew had to crawl out through deck hatches. Good that we found it during what was essentially a drill. But we have these issues on board that we cannot get support for. We have 60,000 litres of diesel fuel on board, which, presents the obvious risk of pollution and fire. We are about 12 metres away from a residential building, parked right beside a residential building. I can see it right now out my window. We have galvanic corrosion inside our tanks, okay, because we have stray electric current somewhere on the boat. Current, something is not properly earthed. We don't know where it is. We can't find it. So we have galvanic corrosion inside the tanks. Our fuel tanks and our water tanks form the hull bottom and the hull sides. Those are measurably, an ABS surveyor with the right equipment would be able to tell us exactly how much tank material we've lost. So if she, and furthermore, because of this detention, we've been unable to obtain protection and indemnity insurance. Okay, it's one of the three policies you'll yachts are required to carry. There's hull and machinery, which covers the physical asset. This is the owner of the boat. Should he lose the boat, he will get paid the agreed value of the boat. We have crew welfare, which covers me and my team and our belongings and our medical. Well, those covers are in place. What we have been denied is protection and indemnity, third-party liability cover. So if this boat caught fire here at the quay, and we have had it nearly happen several times, or a through-hull valve was accidentally kicked and water starts pouring into the engine room, my priority would be to round up the crew and stand on the quay. And she would sink or burn right here. Now, aluminium burns at, what, 3,500 degrees Celsius? That building beside us, gone. Right? That building would go if this 60-meter boat, aluminium boat with 60,000 litres of fuel on board, there would be an ecological disaster here in central London. All of these migratory birds that are all around us, all of these canals that feed into all of these businesses and banks and all around Canary Wharf here, polluted for years. Now, we wouldn't be liable for it. The government would be liable for that. The British government, the British taxpayer would be liable for hundreds of millions of pounds worth of cleanup. Now, we've been waving this flag for a long time. The boat needs help. We need contractors on board. We need a suitable facility where we have access to, you know, forklift trucks, overhead cranes, haul-out facilities, shore-based storage facilities, shore-based electrical power, waste management, extraction, ventilation, heating, lighting, all these sorts of things. You know, we can't start doing work here. We'd be dumping toxins all into Canary Wharf. So, yeah, the state of the boat is rapidly deteriorated. I've sent you some photographs of some of the mitigating efforts that we've tried to enact to protect, at least slow down the degradation of the asset. But, you know, we're now drilling different things on board. We don't drill man overboard. We drill abandoned ship. And it doesn't involve a life raft. It involves getting onto the quay and going 100 metres down the quay to a new muster point on land. This is what we're drilling now.
And the photos that you did send me showed some quite significant scaffolding on the aft deck of the boat. So is that, did you put that in place to protect the structure of the boat?
We put that in place because all around us there are high-rise buildings going up, all right, being built. Since we've been here, at least 1, 2, 3, 4 new buildings on the other side of the canal to windward of us have been erected, and 2 new buildings on our other side here have gone up. All day, there is cutting and grinding and pouring of concrete and steel, reinforcing steel, right? This steel forms airborne particles of steel. Tiny little things, not much. They're no thicker than a human hair and maybe 2 millimeters long. But there are millions of them, and they're airborne. And they land on the boat, and then they start to corrode, and they start to eat their way into the painted surfaces of the boat. Right? If you look at a close-up of a human skin, and you see a hair follicle, right? That's what these metal particles do to the paint. They have already done it. They've done it. They've eaten into the paint and formed pores all over the paint, which has degraded the waterproof coating on the vessel, which means water's getting under the paint, in between the metal and the fairing, and lifting paint off, rusting, essentially. The grinding of the concrete has put up, we vacuum every day. We vacuum if it's dry enough to do so. We vacuum the outside of the boat every day, and we're pulling Ziploc bags full of chunks of concrete, stones and gravel and sand, right? And this is blocking all of our ventilation, air ventilation. It's blocking all the deck drains, which, of course, you don't have access to deck drains. They go through the structure and out to the sea. Well, those are now blocked full of concrete. The gravel itself is corroding to everything outside, all the wood, the paint, the glass, the scaffold has been put up to try and deflect, because it has a roof on it, on the scaffold, it's trying to deflect some of this airborne material. And as a result of some of this, one of the snagging issues is the coating system on the outside wood. Okay, it wasn't a varnish; it was an experimental oil. It hasn't worked. It didn't work as we projected it to. This would have been addressed by Royal Houseman and replaced with a different product 2 years ago. Okay, because that hasn't happened, all of the outside wood has lifted, so allowing water ingress under the wood. So it gets under the wood and then it finds its way down a cable race or a piping run and finds its way to the inside of the boat. So now we've got rainwater dripping down through the luxury ceilings on the inside of the boat, and we don't know exactly how it's getting in, because all around the outside of the boat, wood is lifted. Well, yeah, the scaffolding is an attempt to slow down this water ingress to the inside of the boat. I mean, it's getting worse. It's getting worse week by week. And we've now started to destroy the inside of the boat, right? So the scaffolding is an attempt to keep some of these metal particles off the boat, the concrete dust off the boat, and the rain off the wood to prevent that getting inside. You know, water and electronics don't bode well. We've had one by one electronic systems are starting to fail. Inside the boat, slowly she's dying.
And it's not just the elements, of course, that you're trying to keep off or away from the inside of the boat. You're also dealing with members of the public climbing all over the boat. So I understand there's some fencing been erected around Fee, but that hasn't stopped intruders from getting on board. And I think in your email you referenced one particularly alarming case recently, and also, you know, some crew being pushed out of the way by people getting onto the boat. Mm-hmm. But you said that this has been the 18th recorded intrusion of Fee since she's been in London.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep. So in the earlier days, before we put the fencing up, we recorded and we found, you know, empty vodka bottles and fag packets lying around the boat. And we looked at our CCTV and we'd seen that youths, from what we could see, they were just looking for adventure, right? Looking for mischief, getting on board and climbing up onto the roof of the vessel, some 35 meters in the air with no safety gear, no harnesses. If they had fallen off and this is high gloss paint up there, it's like ice, very, very slippery. If they'd fallen off, catastrophic. Then we started to see more sinister people trying to get on the boat. We had a few occasions in the middle of the day where one incident, for example, and not the one I explained in my email to you, our chief stewardess saw these guys on the camera, went outside, four teenagers or early 20s, all dressed in black hoods, black bandanas over their faces, walked up the passerelle. She held out her hand and said, "Sorry, what are you doing? This is a private yacht. You're not allowed to come on here." They manhandled her out of the way and all barged past her and came onto the boat. Okay. Well, she did the right thing, very quickly came inside. And shortly thereafter, seven or eight of us with them, all raced outside for a game of cricket. And these lads took off pretty quickly. But 2 weeks ago, we had two guys climb around the fencing. So there was a very determined effort to get around the fencing. They got on the boat. They ignored the audible alarms, motion sensors. They walked up to the side crew door where our chief engineer was just on the other side of the door on his way out, because he had seen them on the cameras too. He opened the door and they, faced with him, tried to push past him and get in the boat. He gave them a shove, shut the door and locked the door. Now, in most other cases, when this has happened, these people have realized that there are personnel on board, and so they've bolted. In this latest incident, they didn't leave. They kept trying to open the door, even though our engineer had locked it. They then spent the next 20 to 30 minutes going around the boat, trying to get in. We're recording them on all the outside cameras. He's called the police. He's on the phone to the police while looking at the cameras, saying, "Yep, they're on board." They're trying to get in. They're now up on the port side upper deck trying to get in that door. No, it's locked. Okay, they're coming down the stairs. They're trying to get in the main salon doors, wrenching these doors, trying to get them open. They knew there were crew on board and they were wanting to get on board, get inside anyway. Now, that's an escalation as far as we're concerned. This is with intent to either do harm or do serious damage. I mean, kidnapping, assault, arson. You know, they were not deterred. They were determined to get inside the boat.
Well, some of these sound quite genuinely pretty scary. And you as captain with the duty of care over your crew, I mean, it must be an awful experience hearing that people have barged your chief stewardess out of the way or have, you know, tried to push past the engineer. And I mean, when you let the authorities know about these incidents, is there any kind of response from them? Do they just kind of shrug their shoulders or are they taking these incidents seriously?
Yeah, no, absolutely. They are taking them seriously. On that most recent example, most recent case, for example, officers attended pretty quickly. I'm going to say 15 minutes, which is quite quick in these days. Some officers came to the boat. They took witness statements, and then they followed up with a forensics team. They spent several hours on the boat taking fingerprints, reviewing all of the CCTV footage, which they took examples of. I've had follow-up contact, telephone calls from the investigating officer who is keeping myself, our chief officer, and our chief engineer in the loop. So, no, they're taking it seriously. This is attempted breaking and entering, bordering on assault, you know, with... and they are, they're not taking it lightly at all.
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah.
And, I hope it acts as some kind of deterrent, because obviously it's not great to have people crawling all over the boat, especially given the fact that it's in an increasingly unsafe condition.
Well, this is right. I mean, a few of these occasions they've, you know, we don't have locks on the washdown locker doors, for example. So these guys have stolen a chamois or a washdown brush or a flashlight. What they're going to do with a washdown pole is beyond me, but, you know, some of these people just want to get on board and see whatever's not tied down, they'll nick it.
Take a souvenir.
But with this latest example, we don't know. Maybe they represent a larger group or a political affiliation. Maybe they want to make a statement. Maybe it's something planned. So we have to take all precautions, you know, and our precaution on here is that we can't engage. We need to lock ourselves in the boat and call the police. Although that is very, very difficult to do when sitting inside with six or seven big blokes. We, sometimes if there's two of them and six of us, we're all up for a game of cricket, you know, or golf.
So how many crew remain with the boat, Guy?
We have seven at the moment, yeah. And we're about to take on another one.
Okay. So that will be eight. And everyone, and just to be clear, everyone's still getting paid. The owner is still
absolutely
paying.
Yeah. Yeah. The owner through his office regularly, he values us because we value him. Yeah. Mm. I have seen the guy in tears over this situation. I've seen the guy in tears over what this situation has done for the future of his children. He's got young children. He is very, very thankful and grateful for our loyalty. The fact that we're still here where we could have all walked. We could have all said, you know what, I'm off back to the sunshine at sip a mojito under a palm tree in the Med somewhere, but we've stayed. Operating costs, although they're at a bare minimum because we can't get anything fixed. But salaries, medical expenses, cleaning materials, food, provisions, They've never missed a beat, you know.
And you mentioned actually in the email, one of the most striking parts of the email was, and you've referenced it there, just the pain this has clearly caused the owner, and the fact that Fee, which was supposed to be kind of the crowning glory of his, you know, almost, you know, to crown his success, build this extraordinary yacht with Royal Housman. Now he's got a very negative association with the boat and kind of, it pains him to even hear the name.
Well, this is right. This is right. I mean, you can imagine 8 years ago, thereabouts, when he first had this idea, I mean, no one knew what Fee was going to look like, nor what she would be called. He just knew that he wanted to build something exceptional, to break a few boundaries, to push a few rules in terms of design. And you were there, Stuart, for a lot of this design and build process. And we spoke throughout the build. And years ago, you and your team got a good impression that we were building something quite remarkable.
Absolutely.
The market, the global market, greeted Fee with accolades and applause when she was launched. She is a landmark vessel. And he had visions of he's a very private, humble guy. He's not a proud guy at all. He's not a showy, flashy chap. He had visions of his wife and children using this boat, and their friends, and traveling to remote, distant places, which is why we built a support ship to carry extra supplies and fuel and equipment with us. And not only, okay, so now for almost 3 years, he's never cruised on board. Okay, he's visited twice. His wife and children have never seen the boat. The children are now growing up rapidly, and their lifestyles and lives are changing. They're no longer his little children who want to come on daddy's boat. You know, they want to go away with their boyfriend on holiday, or, you know, life changes. He's missed an irrepeatable window in his life.
I just want to read those words from your email. You know, with Fee sitting in London, so he's out of pocket to the tune of £11 million by just having the boat there and not being able to use it. And then, but you've also written, the end result is that he, his wife and family no longer care anything for this boat whatsoever. They never fell in love with Fee.
I mean, his family would have been living this journey with him, as he will have shown them all the sketches, that he would have bored them to tears with talk of nothing but this boat for years and years and years, built them up to such a state of excitement. And now, of course, with his serious health concerns, what energy he does have, he needs to focus elsewhere, right? He needs to focus it on him and his family and whatever time he's got left. For them, they have seen that the family have seen his heart ripped out of his chest due to this situation and the state that Fee is in now sitting here. They've seen the anguish and the financial strain it's put on him. So they've never had a chance to come on here and build memories, right? Take family photos, take Christmas card shots and family home movies and the laughter and the love and all the reasons why these families build these boats. The owners absolutely fall in love with their boats and they share so many memories together because that hasn't happened. And because any mention of Fee now gets his blood pressure up, you know, perhaps puts him in bed exhausted for the rest of the day. It breaks his heart. They've seen it. They're not interested in the boat. To them, Fee is a cause of anguish to their dying father. And so the kids and the wife don't want to know. And he is slowly disengaged. Why continue stressing, causing himself inordinate amounts of stress when we don't seem to be getting anywhere or nor any answers? And further, Stuart, I also want to say that the the comments made by Mr. Shapps, associating there Mr. Naumenko as one of Vladimir Putin's cronies, close personal friends of Putin, an oligarch. This has put an enormous global stigma on a man that does not deserve it. He's not friends with Putin, as has been proven and accepted by the courts. He's never met Putin. He's never been military or political. He's never worked with Putin, never benefited from the regime. And yet the world thinks that he is. Now, that stigma weighs heavy on him. It's further impacted his social and economic and private life, just having that label put on him, you know? Like being accused of a really horrible crime when you know you didn't do it. You will be forever that guy that was accused under a cloud. And that's another thing he's suffering from now.
Yeah, and I can't imagine we're going to get a corrective statement from Mr. Shapps anytime soon. So what's going to happen now? I mean, I guess it's almost impossible to say, but, you know, what if Fee falls out of class? I know there was talk of moving the boat to Southampton, but those plans don't seem to be working out. So if she stays in London, falls out of class, can't move, I mean, what happens now?
Good question. If she falls out of class, she loses all of her insurances and all of her operational certificates. From a manager of people perspective, what that would mean is my crew and I would no longer be able to be on here full time, right? Which means that then we have this asset. We would have to cut all the power, and that includes power to things like bilge pumps and fire detection systems and so on. And then this would be just a floating hunk of metal in central London. And at that point in time, I'm pretty certain that all the residents around here would have something to say about that, because it poses enormous risk to them. She could sink, explode, burn at any time, and there would be no one here to address it. If she falls out of class and loses all of her operational certificates, the only option in future would be to tow her somewhere, like a crippled ship. And that would probably form part of a claim against the government in the event that she were released and needed towing somewhere. That would be added to the rather enormous list of damages claims.
Well, that's the point I think you made fairly early on as well. I remember we spoke and you said, well, this could end up, the UK taxpayer could end up footing the bill for a lot of this, which is a bit of a kick in the teeth for the UK taxpayer, really.
Well, absolutely. You know, there's a couple of factors here. The Court of Appeal acknowledged that, first of all, the High Court, Mr. Shapps' comments were dismissed by the High Court as acceptable political hyperbole, which we found outrageous. So we raised that as one of the issues with the Court of Appeal. The Court of Appeal rescinded those comments of the High Court judge and said this is not political hyperbole, this is defamation and slander. So, you know, that pretty much opened a gate for us to pursue Mr. Shapps personally and directly with a defamation case. Outside of that, there is a damages case that could be, our team have looked and continue to look at this extremely closely. Can't talk too much about that, obviously, but yeah, significant damages claims, many, 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 many zeros, far more than the value of the vessel in terms of damage to reputation, loss of charter earnings, loss of technical advantage. There are many factors and grounds under which these damages claims have been put together, but towing the vessel to a proper place of repair would form part of those damages, yeah.
Have those, has that been suggested to the UK government? I mean, is there an ultimate, I mean, is there even a whisper of an idea of getting Fee out of the Docklands and down to a shipyard for some works, or is it all just a false start after false start with those conversations?
Again, a good question. I've been working on having us moved to a proper place of detention for 2 years. We had the backing of some very influential people within the government organisations who were then removed from their posts. And again, we went around the same Ferris wheel we've been going around, trying to explain to new people every time, until very recently, 6 weeks ago, when we had a refreshed engagement, and it may have had something to do with the change of government. For the last 3 months of the Conservative government in the UK, the response from the government legal division was that so close to an election, the Conservative government weren't going to do anything. They weren't going to take any action whatsoever.
Mm.
And then for the first 3 or 4 months of the Labor government, their comment was they're not going to take any action or do anything because they need to come to grips with the situation. So there's another 6 or 7 months lost due to bureaucratic red tape and change of personnel. In about the last 6 weeks, we have had refreshed engagement with somebody at the Ministry of Transport that does seem to, they've given us a few contacts to help with the insurance situation. So they're trying, at least they're understanding the issue and trying to offer some sort of path. They've also reopened the discussion of moving to Southampton. But it's a chicken or the egg situation because obviously Ocean Village Marina in Southampton, who have had a place for us reserved for 2 years and are welcoming us into their marina, can't do so unless we're insured. Particularly if we've got no P&I insurance, they're not going to moor this yacht side two beside the Hilton Hotel in an international yacht marina with no P&I insurance. So it's a chicken or the egg situation. So we can't move now.
So in a way, was your email just prompted by your sense of desperation at the current situation with all these looming deadlines about dropping out of class, insurance pressures, people jumping on the boat, safety of crew? And then was it just an electronic scream about the current situation you find yourself in?
Yeah, very much so. It's also quite relevant to point out there was the International Institute of Strategic Studies released a report that indicated that the assets of Russian business persons frozen by the West have not weakened the Russian economy. Okay? They've not weakened the Russian economy. That the Russian economy has not only rebounded after March 22, but is in fact steadily growing. This report also acknowledged that sanctioned Russian business persons have not been able to exert any pressure whatsoever on the Russian regime, not been able to exert any pressure. And in any event, the war in Ukraine has created a new class of wealthy Russian businessmen who owe their fortune to circumstances created by the war.
Mm.
Right? And these people now form President Putin's inner circle. So the old Russian elite have been ineffective whatsoever at putting political pressure on Putin, and the new Russian elite don't want to. So this brings into question the validity of the detention regulation. The objective of that measure, the government's stated objective of introducing the detention regulation, was to put pressure on the Russian elite so that they would put pressure on Putin to end the war. Various international studies have subsequently concluded that that has not happened. So if the intended goal of the measure has not been met, why continue? Right? So that was one of the reasons why we're reaching out. Another reason why we're reaching out is that we have a date with the Supreme Court pending. We've been given permission to appear at the Supreme Court, where we are presenting some new evidence and some of this new evidence is just as I described to you, international studies discussing the failure of Western sanctions. And in fact, another poignant fact here is that Western sanctions have forced the return of many, many wealthy Russian businessmen back to Russia. If they're based in the Middle East or Dubai or wherever else, they've been forced to go back to Russia with their assets because one of the few places that they can enjoy their wealth, that they're not sanctioned or restricted in any way. So Russia is seeing an increase, and President Putin's address to the Federal Assembly recently, I think it was in July or August, President Putin addressed the Federal Assembly and mocked those Russians that were withdrawing their assets from Russia into the world stage and saying, that was a bad decision, as you're now seeing. You can't use your assets. Come back to Russia. Invest in Russian infrastructure, which is more profitable for them, which is what they've been doing. So they're all flooding back into Russia with their money, investing into Russian industry and infrastructure. Has been presented as a more secure and prosperous option. So that's relevant to the question of whether targeting Mr. Maumenko is actually rationally connected to the goal of exerting pressure on the Russian government.
And so that argument will form part of your appeal, your continued appeal against the detention with the court Supreme system court. In the UK.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Have you got a date for your next...
Early January, I believe.
Early January, okay. By which time, of course, Fee could be out of class.
By which time Fee will be out of class.
Will be out of class.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Guy, from a Boat International point of view, I can assure you we'll keep chasing and following this story throughout.
Thank you. We wanted to stay relevant with our friends at the media. We wanted to stay relevant and not sort of forgotten in this corner of London until such time as a disaster does happen.
Well, I mean, that's a genuine consideration. You kind of think these big boats are, bad things don't happen to big boats, but we've learned very recently that that's not the case. And we could be... we're facing a potential very, very serious and critical situation with Fee falling out of class and things continuing to go wrong on the boat. And I just hope we can avoid any dire emergency situations, but you never know. Boats need constant care and maintaining, as we all know. And I know you're doing everything you can on board, but, you know, Fee needs to get out of the water. She needs to be fixed.
Yep.
So I can only hope you get that result sooner rather than later.
Thanks, Stuart. Thank you.
And Guy, I just wanted to, thank you for your time as ever. And let's keep in touch and we'll keep following the story. And good luck in January.
Thank you, Stuart. And to you and your team at BI, your support has always meant a lot to us. As I said at the start of this chat, our resolve remains strong. We're not easily knocked down. It's something that makes me sleep better at night. We will keep fighting. Hopefully, one day soon, we will sail off down the Thames and be gone over the horizon. Thanks again, Stuart.
Cheers, Guy. Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview, which was a production of Boat International Media. Huge thanks to Naomi Mitchell and Adam Geist for mixing this one. Don't forget to like and subscribe and check back every week for our regular boat briefing update.